Hello and welcome to another edition of Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network, where we are always ready for that next cup of coffee. My name is Trevor Huth, and I am joined by Nate the Great Kosher. Nate, how are you doing today?
Doing good. Hard to believe it's already July 1st. Summer's flying by, isn't it?
It is, yes. And the baseball season is flying by. I mean, I'm now starting to read trade rumors of mock trades, and well, we'll get into that. But what we should get into first, Nate, and I don't know that it was us that caused it. I have to believe it is. But several times we've talked about James Wood and when he might get promoted. And he was finally. He made his debut today, the day we're recording on Monday. So James Wood is finally up. We've talked about it a few times. And of course, we have nothing to do with the Nationals' decisions. I was just making a joke. But it's cool to see James Wood up because, well, I mean, in my opinion, prospects are fun and they should all be up all the time. But it's just adding another element of talent and another element of power and excitement to the big league level.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's Wood was probably the last top flight prospect can't miss that we've sort of talked about that now he's going to make a debut. So he's third overall in MLB pipeline, and people, I know they've said that about Jackson Holliday and Churio as well, but he appears to be can't miss. Listen to this stat line, Trevor. He's 6'7", 234 pounds. He will play left field in his debut, and he's hitting .353 with 10 home runs, 37 RBI, and an OPS of 1.058 in the minors. So, I mean, those are gaudy numbers. And longtime veteran Eddie Rosario was the one who got designated for assignment. Atlanta Braves World Series hero, right? Wasn't he big on that?
I think so.
The year the Braves won?
I don't know how Rosario was doing this year, but that tells you what they think of Wood, right? It's not just some reliever to make a spot to see if this prospect is going to hit. They're like, all right, hey, you know what? We're going to get a veteran presence. We're going to have to just let him go because we need that outfield spot. And you mentioned him playing third base. He got his first big league hit in the bottom of the second inning. Hit a ground ball the other way, just on the other side of second base, and got himself a single for his first big league hit. It was 106.7 miles per hour off the bat.
Wow.
Yeah. And so we talk about the man having power. The man has power.
Washington's only four games out of a wild card spot. So that tells you they're hoping he can carve that starting position out, and they want to hand it over to him, and hopefully he can come through. And as well, and for your fantasy team, if you've had him sitting on your bench, you want him to succeed.
Absolutely. And look at the timing, Nate. I mean, July 1st is when he makes his debut. That gives them a full month to see if he's going to help them and if he's going to be there to help them make a push into the playoffs. So you hate to put it all on one guy because it's going to be a whole team thing. But if James Wood shows up and he proves he's going to contribute to winning and the team catches fire with James Wood, you know, as a big part of that, then they probably turn into buyers at the deadline to try to make a push. We might see them make a couple, I wouldn't say aggressive trades to try to win a World Series necessarily, but you might see some minor trades if they can make it work. Or maybe they do go for a big swing. Who knows? But I think that where they're sitting right now and the move they made, this could be a real indicator for the Nationals of, hey, are we going to be buyers or sellers come trade deadline time in about 30 days?
Yeah, and it's funny how it always happens around the trade deadline. A team gets hot, they become buyers, or a team falters and they become sellers. But yeah, we're about a month away, and the All-Star break thrown in there. We should have some, you know, be able to tell what direction teams are going here pretty soon.
So, Nate, the thing with the Nationals and what they might look like at the trade deadline that is interesting me the most, I think, is that they have done pretty well trading for prospects. And that means they're now going to be at a point where they're going to be trading for big league guys. And I you know, I've never worked in a front office in terms of, but in terms of scouting or anything or player evaluation, but how much does that change in terms of, you know, evaluating these players? Are they going to be able to have the same amount of success trading for big leaguers? I can't imagine it's going to be too different. You have a lot more information when it comes to the big leaguers, but if they do decide that they are going to be buyers and try to make a push for the playoffs, they're going to have to make a couple of right moves because, you know, their core that they're trying to build on is coming from their top prospects, which means they're not going to be as willing to trade from the top end of that. And we might see some of the guys they got from the Padres being used to bring in big leaguers because they still have some guys from that trade, which turned out to be a really good trade. I mean, it's brought Mackenzie Gore. It's brought James Wood. It's brought CJ Abrams, and they're all contributing right now. So they might use the other parts of that, Robert Hassel. They might use Jarlin Susana to bring in other parts, but that was a really good trade to point out of that Juan Soto deal. And it's just, I'm very interested to see what happens with the Nationals. That's one of those teams I'm super interested to see.
Yeah, that trade package you were discussing, I mean, that was obviously a huge win for the Nationals, even more so with Soto leaving the Padres, you know, but you could say, looking back in hindsight, I mean, that was an A. You'd have to give that trade an A grade. But what I'd like to ask you about a team sort of similar where there's some young stars but haven't done well this season, and that's the Blue Jays. So I saw a story just recently. Bo Bichette was asked about trade rumors and deadline and ask him if he would be surprised if he was moved. He said, no, not surprised at all. I know he's having a down year, but do you think Vlad Guerrero or Bichette could be moved? Are they still untouchable? The Jays have kind of been a disappointment this season, but I mean, those are some big young names.
So I'm going to start this, the answer to this, just by saying, I do think they're still untouchable. Bo Bichette, Vlad Jr., they're not going to move. I really don't believe that the front office would want to. If they do, they're signaling that their long-term plan isn't going to work, and they think that what they've put together is, I guess, kind of in disarray. Now, they're playing a very tough division in the AL East. They're at the bottom of that division right now. You know, and when we're recording, they're the only team under 500. Right. So as we record this, the Rays are the closest to the Blue Jays. They're at 42-42. So it's a hard division to be in. And if I'm the Blue Jays looking at that, you know, maybe this isn't the year, but we still have Bichette. We still have Vlad Jr. And there's still a young talent that is going to be able to play. So the question there is, do you, to me at least, if I were in charge of the Blue Jays, do I start using my veterans who maybe aren't going to be in that long-term plan as maybe trade chips to try to find younger guys, maybe at the, I would say, prospect level, but I think you're looking to, instead of get like young lottery tickets, I think they're in a place where they're going to be looking for double A or higher, which means they might not get the highest prospect pedigree, but they're going to get guys who could be contributors or who they believe they can develop. And I think if I'm the Blue Jays, that's where I'm going. So, you know, without knowing everybody's contract status off the top of my head, do you look to dangle Chris Bassitt? Kevin Gausman, you know, maybe Alejandro Kirk, one. I doubt it. Kevin Kiermaier would be the other name, I think. Dangle Kevin Kiermaier or something. Turner, right. Like those guys who might be able to help other teams who are in a playoff push, they might give you a mid to lower level prospect for one of those players. And I think that's more where the Blue Jays should be focusing, because again, unless they catch fire and everything starts to click right now, they're going to be on the outside looking into the AL East. I mean, the Yankees are just so good right now. And it's just a hard, hard division to be in at the moment. And the Orioles,
whoever doesn't win that is going to be right there at the top of the wild card standings, most likely. So, yeah, it's going to be tough for the Blue Jays this season, even if they do get hot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, just to take it back to a different organization, because these trades and how they work out are so interesting to me. And we had talked about the Nationals as sellers and bringing in prospects. Well, the perennial buyers over the last 2 or 3 years, that's been the Padres. And something I sent to you is that just from the 2021 class, the Padres have the most of their draftees that have made it to the majors at this point. They have five guys from their 2021 draft class that have made it to the majors, but three of them have been traded away and made it to the majors with other teams. And so that is the flip side of this trade deadline. And that is what buying looks like. You have to be willing to get rid of your prospects. And there's been no team more willing to get rid of their prospects in the last few years than the San Diego Padres. And just to pull up the names from that 2021 class, Jackson Merrill was one of them. He's obviously up with the Padres right now. Alec Jacob is up with the Padres right now. Those are the only two. James Wood is up with the Nationals. Robert Gasser's with the Brewers. Mm-hmm. And Jackson Wolf is with the, I want to say, Pirates. And yeah, I'm not fully confident Jackson Wolf is actively in the major leagues right now, but he has been in the past. He's a big lefty. And, you know, they can draft and they're willing to trade him. So the question is, I'm interested to see where the prospect market is, because I feel like it's been declining over the last few years.
I know Wolf is in the minors, but debuted last season. I guess it still counts when you've drafted them to look at how many of those draft picks have made it, into the big picture. So someone else I was thinking about is the Astros. So the Astros right now are three games back in the AL West. The Mariners are leading the division. And then it's the Rangers, actually, the defending champs, another sort of disappointing team. They're eight games under 500. So with that being said, I could see the Astros. It depends, like we mentioned before, it depends how this goes. And if they get hot right now, they could maybe pick up some pieces. They're obviously a win now team, unless they were to completely fall apart. I could see them moving on. And I was thinking about the bullpen from the Astros. And if you remember, they had Ryan Pressly. Ryan Pressly was a pretty good closer for the last couple of seasons before they got Josh Hader this season. And Josh Hader is not having quite the same season as he had last season for the Padres. He was excellent after, he came over from the Brewers, had a full season with the Padres, and now signed with the Astros. His ERA is up to 3.68 this year, and he has 12 saves. But my question for you, and what I was thinking about, is do you think the Astros would move Josh Hader? They signed him in the offseason. Big deal. I mean, they'd probably have to collapse quite a bit. But the more likely trade is probably Pressly would be moving on. And I could see him going to a contender, probably in setup duty. They probably already have a closer if they're contending. But wondering if you think they would be bold enough to move Hader.
I doubt it. It's always fun to talk about these big name players, these big contract players, because you'd have to get a big return from them. But it takes a lot to trade these guys, because there's a lot of consideration to make. The Astros, I think if they're moving Hader, they're looking at their roster going, hey, it's aging. We have to do something. Our farm is not the greatest at this point. So we need to do a Marlins type fire sale, which has not worked out well for the Marlins, for those paying attention. So it's doubtful that they would move Hader. I think you're right. They probably do move Presley, especially if they're not in contention. But I have to believe that regardless of what's happening, based on their roster construction right now, unless they're going into the deadline going, you know what, we're going to do what the Cubs did, and we're going to make two or three trades when the Cubs traded Rizzo and Bryant and the other one. There was a third one, right?
Yeah, they're young stars. The guys that took them to the World Series.
Right, because Rizzo went to New York. Bryant went to San Francisco. And, oh, my gosh. I'm trying to think of their prospects now that have come up. But,
yeah, I know.
You know, they moved two or three guys.
Those core guys, yeah.
So are you going to do that with Altuve, Bregman? And that's probably it, because you're not getting rid of Yordan. You probably want to keep Jeremy Pena, right? So are you going to do that with Bregman and with Altuve, send them off and try to bring prospects in to retool a little bit? And I just don't see them doing that, especially because, you know, they're probably hoping Verlander eventually gets healthy and comes back and is a staple in that rotation at 42 years old. They're probably hoping that they find the magic, even though the roster is probably not as good as it has been the last couple of years, and they probably know that. But I don't think they're at the point of where the Cubs were, because I think they're a better example than the Marlins a few years back. That was a whole, like, that was when Jeter took over. I'm pretty sure that was a whole regime change at the top, right? So that's not exactly what's happening in Houston. So they're probably more closely related to the Cubs, you know, if you want to make a comparison to what they might look like as sellers at the trade deadline. But I still think they're far off of that, and it would take a lot for them to dive into that. So if they're making moves, and if they're making selling moves, I would think that it's going to be on a smaller scale, like Ryan Presley. But again, these teams all have a plan, right? They're all talking about this. They're going to go back and forth probably 8 times over the next month to try to figure out, what are we going to do with the trade deadline? What's our plan? What's our approach? Who are we calling? You know, and so I guess I could see it going the other way just based on where the standings are right now. But I think that they're going to try to make another push this year, and they would have to reevaluate that heading into next year. If it's my best guess, at least.
Well, I think it's interesting because the Astros have been good for so long, and now it seems like maybe there are some cracks in the armor. You know, they've won 9-1, I looked, in the last 10 games to kind of come back around, but they haven't been great. So I don't see them being a team. I mean, I suppose they could still make some noise in the playoffs, but like you said, the AL East is so strong. I could see where it flips and they do become sellers, because right now they'd have to win the division. It's possible, but I don't know. I'm not high on them this year. But the AL East, speaking of the AL East, those are probably the teams who are all going to be buyers. The Orioles, Yankees, Red Sox. It seems like teams can never have enough pitchers, right? So I'm guessing that all three of those teams are going to make moves, especially the Yankees. Because they're, like you said, they're having a great season. And I actually read a story where the Red Sox were looked at for getting Reed Detmers, our old friend Reed Detmers, who we've talked about. And he struggled. Now, obviously, he's in AAA, So one of these teams could buy low on him. I thought that that's an interesting angle, knowing that he has had talent, he's had success, and maybe he'd get another chance.
I'd like to see the Cardinals try to buy low on Reed Detmers, just because that's his hometown. You know, his dad played for the Cardinals. I feel like that could be a good situation for him. I do want to talk more about buying in the AL East, but first we're going to take a quick time out here on Coffee Talk here from our sponsors. Of course, Coffee Talk is a part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network, where we are always ready for that next cup of coffee. And welcome back to Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Trevor Huth. Of course, Nate Kosher is with me. We're talking trade deadline mostly. I know it's a month away, but it's also super fun. And you know, I, even in fantasy baseball, trade deadline time is my favorite time of the year. I know I have a tendency to check out of checking my rosters every day. I'm not a great fantasy player, but I'm always there come trade deadline time because, you know, that's like the main part of it for me is putting roster together. But before the break, Nate, you had mentioned what the AL East would look like in terms of the trade deadline and buying. And I'm really interested to see what happens, because I'm going to take the Red Sox out of it. They're going to do what they're going to do. The Red Sox are. But to me, the two horse race at the top right now between the Orioles and the Yankees is going to get even more fun, because I think if they're buying, they're going to be in completely different buyers markets. The Yankees pitching is solid. I think there's at least their starting pitching. It's solid. I don't know that they're going to want to touch it too much unless there's a pitcher they can't refuse, right? Unless they get a bargain deal on Tarek Skubal. The hitting side, I saw a stat today from on X, and I believe it's from Mike Petrello, about the Yankees only have two hitters in their lineup who are over 100 OPS plus, which would be average. And the rest have been hurt, haven't played enough, whatever. And I believe that's Judge and Soto, who are the two, if I remember correctly. I'm just trying to remember off the top of my head here. But I think they're going to be looking for hitting, and they're going to be trying to buy hitting. The Orioles are going to be going in the opposite direction. They're going to be trying to find another arm to be a great 1-2 punch with Corbin Burns. Let's say Tarek Skubal, because I've just heard that name a bunch on my Twitter feed, because I'm a Tigers fan, and I hope he's not on the move. But either way, they're going to be making a push for pitching. So the fact that they're going to be looking at separate markets to try to make themselves better to beat the other one, I think that's going to be one of the most fun storylines to follow at the trade deadline.
Well, and so I have a hitter I'm going to discuss throughout there for the Yankees in a minute. But for the Orioles, remember that they also have been out without Felix Bautista this whole season. So he was like lights out as a reliever last year, had Tommy John toward the end of the season. So they're already out with him, who is expected to be a big part. So I could see them adding bullpen arms in Baltimore as well. It seems like teams always pick up some relievers, but there was already a hole there. So that's probably a weakness for them. But here is someone I would almost bet is going to be traded. A hitter. He's a veteran. He's fiery. He could lead some rookies into the postseason. That's Tommy Pham. So if you remember, Pham got signed by the White Sox. This season, he's hitting .265. He has only 4 home runs, 16 ribbies in 49 games. But last year, he had 16 home runs, 22 stolen bases, and he played pretty good in the postseason with the Diamondbacks. I could see the Yankees adding someone like that. Just another a veteran bat. He's going to be probably easy to get from the White Sox because they're not going anywhere. But he seems like someone that's like always trading around at the trade deadline and bounces around, but he's still pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, those are the type of trades that we mostly see. I mean, we love the blockbusters, but there's only a very small number of them every year. And that's why, you know, when you're looking at a specific team and you're reading all of the blogs and all of the potential mock trades that could be made by this team, a lot of it, you just kind of have to sift through and be like, you know, probably not. Like, there's one I saw today from a guy that I really like. I think he does a fantastic job as a reporter for the Tigers. And he did a, what are some possible options for a Tarek Skubal trade? And he did a couple of mocks with Baltimore. And one of them had Jackson Holliday as the headliner. And it's like, you know, again, I think he does a great job. I don't mean this any negativity towards him, but that's probably not going to happen. Right. So the exercise is what kind of player, what kind of deal would it take? It's not necessarily this is a trade that could happen. And I think that's how we need to approach some of these mock trades. But those Tommy Pham trades, those are the type of trades that happen more often than not. Like a lot of trades are just relievers. I mean, the Tigers, I think, have traded a reliever at the deadline every year for the last billion years, if I recall correctly. So it's just a matter of, I think of what can the teams afford to give away, especially those teams who are selling. A lot of times their best players are going to be their relievers. And that's why we see a lot of relievers move to competing teams, because the competing teams need the relievers who may have stepped up as a closer on the selling teams. So,
yeah,
I'm with you. Tommy Pham is a guy who always seems to be in that trading conversation. And it's just because he can bring that bat off the bench, or he can bring something to that team, and it's not going to cost the team one of their top prospects. Because a trend I've noticed, Nate, at least I think I've noticed, I haven't actually put it down on paper and looked into it, is that the value of prospects and trades is declining. You're not seeing the top prospects traded anymore unless it's Juan Soto going to the Padres. You don't see teams as willing to give up their top guys. And to me, that's because there's more information available and you're better at evaluating. But also, that makes blockbusters even harder, because if the Tigers want to go into a trade saying, we're going to trade Tarek Skubal, well, yeah, they better ask for Jackson Holliday. They might end up with Keston Hurstad, but they better ask for Jackson Holliday, right? So, I don't know. It's makes it harder for me to want to trade the top end guys if you don't think you're going to be getting that value back.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I went back and I looked at trade deadline last year, 2023, just the type of deals that were happening. So a lot of pitchers, as we said, Lance Lynn was traded. Kendall Graveman was traded. Verlander, Jordan Hicks. A lot of pitchers, but here's one I didn't remember and very interesting in the prospect world. The Rangers acquired Max Scherzer from the Mets for Luis Angel Acuna, Ronald's younger brother. And looking back, so that's a very interesting trade. Scherzer, I think he had at least a handful of starts before he went down, but there you have a legitimate star, maybe a little bit aging out, but a veteran star for a prospect straight up. And those are some big names. Those are the ones that are fun. But in reviewing this list, yeah, the majority, as you said, it's relievers. It's some veteran bats. Carlos Santana was moved last season. Ahmed Rosario. Jorge Lopez for Dylan Floro. So those are kind of just the middle of the road trades. That's what typically happens. And it's not going to be as exciting, but those are the moves that make a difference for teams in the postseason.
Yeah. And
I guess that also affects fantasy.
It does. It does. Look at Nate. We haven't talked about fantasy baseball yet. Let's get there. Yes, it does affect fantasy. Also, as a Tigers fan, I'm very disappointed that I forgot the third part of the Cubs selling. Please forgive me because I drove 7 hours yesterday and had to be at work at 5 o'clock this morning and then had class to whatever. I've had a very long day. Javier Baez went to the Mets. That was the third trade. I knew there was a third trade, and it just happens to be the shortstop of my favorite team. So of course, but yes.
Yes. Baez.
Fantasy wise. Yes. This is, the trade deadline means a lot because from a fantasy standpoint, Nate, you can tell me if you agree or disagree here, but the way I see it is that when somebody gets traded, their role is going to change, which means they could have more or less of a role, which adds or subtracts value from them from a fantasy standpoint. Their environment is going to change. If you go from hitting in Comerica to hitting at Wrigley, let's look at Nick Castellanos when they traded him to the Cubs. That adds value because he's playing in a smaller park. So you're all of Nick Castellanos' doubles as a Tiger turn into home runs as a Cub. And, you know, so are they going to a different ballpark that's going to help them hit better? Or are they going to a hitter's ballpark from a pitcher's ballpark if they're a pitcher, right? If a pitcher gets traded to Cincinnati or Colorado, I'm immediately a little bit less interested in what they're going to bring to me fantasy-wise. Not like shun them, get away from me. I have Hunter Green in many leagues, but it's just their situation can play into how you can value them in terms of what can they bring to my roster, because they're, you know, some ballparks are better for certain things. Some coaching staffs are better for certain things. If there's a pitcher and he's not doing very well and he gets traded to the Chris Fetter Tigers system, that has now pulled value out of Michael Lorenzen and out of Jack Flaherty and a number of other pitchers, I'm probably going to jump at that pitcher because the team has a history of elevating the game of that player. And so the development system matters to me. The ballpark matters to me. The role matters to me. What's the existing roster look like? And all of that can have an impact on the value of a fantasy baseball player. Nate, again, you can tell me if you agree or disagree, but that's kind of where I see the trade deadline impacting fantasy baseball.
Yes, I do agree with you. What I was going to say is I always think about the closers. It seems like on my fantasy teams, that's what is usually most affected. So, for example, we're talking about Presley and Hader. So in that scenario, you know, if that Presley is your closer, Hader comes in, let's say it was at the deadline, Presley gets bumped to setup man. He could lose all value in your league if you're only counting saves and not holds, for example. And there's other scenarios like that come up. I think last year, Chapman getting traded to the Rangers, that sort of reshuffles their closer hierarchy and bullpen. And so I try to look at those from a fantasy perspective. In real life, it might not be the most exciting trade, but that's where I've seen the biggest fantasy difference is all of a sudden you have someone who gains value. Maybe now they're going to be closing games, or the team gets a veteran reliever and installs them as a closer and bumps maybe your guy who's already pretty good to set up. I think that's where I usually see it. And now we're getting to the point in the season where prospects, where we've been talking about, can they still make a difference? They're going to have less time and probably less of a chance now to make a difference because we're almost at the halfway point. So there's that part of it too, where if I have a prospect I'm holding, watching trades, seeing if they get moved. If not, if their situation doesn't change, there's probably going to become a point where you may want to drop that prospect in a redraft league. And so I would say we're getting closer to having those conversations, and that also fits in with the trade deadline.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right there. I'm one that just straight up watches, log jams. And if there's a prospect I really like that I think needs a shot, like, are they going to move the person in front of them and give them a chance to prove they can do it at the major league level? So, yeah, you're absolutely right. And sometimes with those relievers, as you were mentioning, let's just say that the Yankees get adventurous, right? And they go, you know what? Let's go get Josh Hader from the Astros, which would be like two villains trading with each other, as far as I understand most baseball fan bases. Unless you're a Yankees or Astros fan, the way I've encountered it is that people just don't like the Yankees or Astros. I don't feel that way. I like good baseball, and they both provide great baseball. But you know, they might just go, hey, we got Clay Holmes, we got Josh Hader. Now, look, we have a committee of closers, and that right there cuts the value of both players immediately. And it's important to keep an eye on that, and it's impossible to know everybody's plan for every player, but trying to understand what could happen to your guys, the bullpen roles get reshuffled quite a bit when it comes down to it. And that's, you know, that's just a great point that you made there, Nate. And what I want to do, just as a preview for what's coming up in this last segment, Nate and I, at some point before this podcast ends, are going to attempt to make these mock trades that I talked about how they probably shouldn't happen and you have to take them all with a grain of salt. We're going to create them. And I am thinking very, very hard about what kind of mock trade I want to come up with. We're not quite there yet, but I want to talk quickly before we go into a break, Nate, about one more player. This doesn't necessarily have to do with the trade deadline, but you did bring up the fact that we're getting to the point where, is this prospect going to help me this year? And with the White Sox, they just promoted Kai Bush to AAA. And I don't know if you know much about Kai Bush, Nate, but the tweet that I saw from a guy named Elijah Evans, he does a great job covering the White Sox and their farm system, says that Kai Bush might help the White Sox pitching this year. So one of those guys to keep an eye on, especially if they move a pitcher at the trade deadline, or at least they try to, that might open up a spot, and then you might see Kai Bush get his chance.
Yeah, that's a good reference, because with the White Sox, we've talked a lot about Garrett Crochet. Many teams are interested in him. I saw a list of the White Sox said 15 teams had contacted them supposedly. And then also Eric Fetty, who's had a pretty good season under the radar for the White Sox. It's likely the White Sox are probably going to move quite a few people. And if they're bumping Bush to AAA, it could just be one or two starts. If things go well, he could be up. I mean, based on what you're saying, if it goes well, he could probably be up after the All-Star break. But that is a name to remember for this season. There'll be less and less of those. But he has some great numbers this season.
He does. And those numbers, he's thrown 80 and two-thirds innings, 78 strikeouts as a 2.12 ERA. That was in AA. Again, he just was getting promoted to AAA. So definitely a guy to keep an eye on. I would say probably, you know, All-Star break-ish. If he does well in his first couple starts, maybe see him. Maybe it's one of those September call-up kind of deals. But Kai Bush is definitely a guy to keep an eye on right now, Nate. We're going to take another quick time out here. When we come back, it's going to be mock trade time. I'm so excited. It's going to be fun. But right now, we're going to take a quick time out here on Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network, where we are always ready for that next cup of coffee. And welcome back to Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Trevor Huth. Of course, Nate Kosher is with me. We're talking trades. It's a big trade deadline episode, a month away from it. But, you know, it's never too early to start wondering. And I just want to make a mock trades. I want to talk through the process with you, Nate, because I kind of love doing this. It's fun. I also very much love prospects, and I like when they get traded. I think it's fun to see the value of major leaguers and how that reacts with the prospects. I've talked about that a few times. So I don't know. Do you have any idea for a mock trade or anybody you think might be on the move come the end of this month?
Yes. Well, I mentioned him before the break. I think Garrett Crochet is going to get moved just because people have been talking so much about him. He's been having a great season and teams need pitching help. And I actually initially saw the Padres have been talking a lot about their interest in him. But today I saw the Dodgers have already made an offer also to the White Sox for Crochet. So they may be battling the Padres. So that's what I'd like to focus on is the Dodgers and looking at what they could offer for Crochet. So, based on that, the fact that they need a tremendous, enormous upside, the Dodgers prospects, currently they have Dalton rushing toward the top, a catcher. Do you think they would move him to the White Sox? He's at Double A, but the Dodgers also have Will Smith. So it seems that he could be someone on the move. That's part of the trade. I'm saying Crochet to the Dodgers and rushing would be involved.
So maybe, I mean, they have a plethora of catchers. You mentioned Will Smith. There's Dalton rushing there. There's Diego Cartaya. Thelon Lorenzo is also, he's younger, or he's lower in the system, but he's also there. The problem with him being in a Garrett Crochet trade is that there's already a bevy of young catchers in the White Sox organization. They have Edgar Cuero that they got from the Angels. They have Corey Lee, who they got from Houston, who's only 26 years old, something like that. So the question is, do they believe Dalton Rushing or Diego Cartaya or one of those catchers that the Dodgers might want to let go of, do they believe that they add that much value to what they already have at the catcher position? And I think it'd probably be more likely that they shoot for DePaula, the outfielder, Josu DePaula, I believe. I might have mispronounced his name just now. I apologize. But, the 19-year-old who is a fantastic hitter, they might push more towards maybe trying to get Nick Frosso, even though he's had his bout with injuries. I don't see them pushing for a catcher if they're trading Garrett Crochet, especially at least as the main piece, just because they already have some strength there and you can only catch one guy.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I was thinking toward the top of their prospect list, but you're right. Maybe they have to dip down a little bit further into that list.
Let me throw out a dark horse team for you for Garrett Crochet. Pitchers.
It seems like, yeah, let's hear it.
The St. Louis Cardinals. The Cardinals pitching staff is on average like 35 plus years old. They don't really have an answer. I know they just called up Gordon Graceffo. I do like Graceffo a lot, but he's not necessarily going to be your top of the rotation guy. But they have, I think, enough depth in hitting, and they have reason to push right now because you don't have much time left with Goldschmidt, Arenado as your core hitting. You got Contreras behind the plate. You have the pieces there to make a push to compete in the playoffs, but I think you need a pitcher, and you need a pitcher who you're like, that's our guy who's going to go win. So if you want to push for Garrett Crochet or maybe even Tarek Skubler, one of the top pitching guys on the market, maybe that's when you use a Nolan Gorman, a Jordan Walker, somebody like that to try and bring back a top flight pitcher, just because, especially Walker, I think would be a great move for them. They don't have him up right now, and other teams will want to take a chance on him. So I think you could use him to try to get one of those bigger pitchers, because the Tigers could use an outfielder or third baseman. The White Sox could use anybody who can play baseball other than catcher. So it would make sense to me that the Cardinals could make a push for an arm if they wanted to. That's not really their MO, but if they wanted to, they absolutely could make that push.
Yeah, I like Jordan Walker. I like that idea because he, you know, he was already up last season. He struggled. They sent him back down. But like you said, I'm sure some other teams would be hungry to get their hands on him. And they have definitely not written him off yet. But for the Cardinals, for their perspective, he's kind of lost a little luster. And if they're trying to make a move, he would make a lot of sense. So I like that proposal.
I think there's a few teams who might who could make a push like that. I mean, maybe the Phillies trade Aiden Miller or Justin Crawford. I want to say the Braves might get involved, but they mostly have pitchers. Most of their top prospects are pitchers who have debuted, like Smith Shawver and Waldrip and Schwellenbach. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of in a precarious situation there. Obviously, the Orioles are another team that could be in that conversation. You could try to trade Kobe Mayo as your main piece, Heston Kerstad. I doubt you do Couser. Kerstad's been great at the major league level. I don't know if you want to try to trade him either, but Norby will carry some weight. Connor Norby will.
They have a lot. A lot of pieces.
So I don't know. It's going to be interesting because the guy I was going to bring to conversation was Scooble. So I'm trying to think of a hitter that could be on the move, but sometimes those are harder to come up with than big name pitchers.
So
do you have any hitters you think could be on the move?
Good question. Let me think about this. I'm going to pull up these standings, MLB standings, to see what other teams have faltered here. Oh, we mentioned the Rangers. They have underperformed, and they've had Corey Seager has been hurt, and they have a lot of hitters who have last season contributed to that great offense. But what about someone like Garcia? Adolis Garcia.
That was my first thought when you mentioned the Rangers. What does his contract look like?
Yeah, so I just looked at that. He signed through next season. So he had a 2-year, $14 million deal. This season he's hitting .221 with 16 home runs and 44 RBI. 31 years old. So a streaky hitter. But if they start to sell off pieces, I could see him moving.
I could too. And I think you're looking at a guy, a team like maybe the Yankees, because again, the Yankees need hitters. But I also, for Adolis Garcia, you're probably not getting Jason Dominguez, Spencer Jones, any of these guys at the top. I think you're probably looking more towards the maybe Clayton Beter, maybe Yorbit Vivas mm-hmm. would make some sense.
Yeah.
Just put the trade deadline aside. I need somebody to give Yorbit Vivas a chance at the major league level. I think he's going to turn into a big league regular. I've thought that since I scouted him a couple years ago, and he just can't seem to find a spot, and he's in the Yankee system right now. So I'm speaking that into existence, that he goes to a situation that's good for him. The Yankees will give him to the Tigers for a reliever, and he'll get a chance in Detroit and be amazing. But I think you're looking more towards there. Maybe Cade Smith with the Yankees. He's a fireballer. So it would make sense to me that you get a more of a mid-tier guy for that. Like, I think Clayton Beter might make a lot of sense there, but you're not going to get a top guy you might for the pitchers we were talking about.
Right. No, I think you're right. And I was also thinking about Evan Carter. He's had a bad season, but yeah, what I meant, they're not going to trade him. But what I meant is, if they trade Garcia, Garcia becomes more expendable because they have Evan Carter. That's what I'm trying to say. So
yes, that makes much more sense.
Yes, like let's not forget Evan Carter was a stud last season. He had a down season and has been hurt, but the Rangers could afford to move Garcia because right now they don't have Carter, but they're, you know, he's penciled in for the future. So
they
have a logjam in that outfield.
They do, because it's Adolis Garcia, Robbie Grossman, Derek Hill, Travis Jankowski, Wyatt Langford, Leody Taveras are all on the active roster right now. I also think that Texas, if they decide to move a big league piece, might want to trade from a bevy of starters that they have. I mean, Dane Dunning is on their active mm-hmm. roster and has gotten a start. They have Nathan Eovaldi, John Gray, Andrew Heaney, Michael Lorenzen, I think, has gotten a start here and there. Or no, he's in the rotation. I'm sorry. Max Scherzer, Jose Urania. They just have starters galore, it seems like. And I think they might be in a conversation of, hey, maybe we, not necessarily for a massive prospect, for something we might think can help, maybe we have to unload one of these pitchers as well.
Yeah, good point. They do have a lot of pitchers. Who did I have in the... One of those guys I had earlier this season on one of my fantasy teams, like Dane Dunning or someone like that, and I traded him because he wasn't getting – oh, no, it was Jose Urena. He wasn't getting consistent mm-hmm. starts, but he had a nice stretch of starts. But then he got bumped. He got bumped out of the starting rotation. So, yeah, that's another good call there with Scherzer back.
Yeah, and one more thing, Nate, that I just – would like to say, and I think we're at the point where we're about to wrap this up anyway, but one type of trade we haven't talked about that is something to keep an eye on is those salary dump trades.
True.
Because there are teams who want to move some salary and they eat part of the contract, and you know, you don't, it depends on how much you eat, you know, you get more return, less return, whatever, but there are teams who will take a lesser prospect to get rid of a contract they don't like, and get it off of their books. And so I don't know if we're necessarily going to see that here at the trade deadline, but that's another trade that happens. And that's a harder one to mock, obviously. So I don't know. There's just a lot to take into consideration when you're looking at trade deadline stuff. And I'm excited. It's always a fun part of the year. It's about a month away. And I think as we get closer, it'll be more of us talking about how that looks from a fantasy baseball standpoint, but man, this was a pretty good real life trade deadline primer podcast.
Yeah, it's a good start. As we move closer to the deadline, we'll know more and some real trades will happen, then the dominoes will fall. And I'm not going to describe any moves for this team, but a team we haven't talked about, I'll throw this out as sort of a preview for down the road, is the Mets. With Steve Cohen, you know, he's definitely not afraid to make a move. And now the Mets have been hot. They've been doing great. And so they've actually sort of re-entered the picture. I could see them either way, no matter what happens with them, they're going to be making moves. That's my prediction, Trevor.
Yeah, I mean, hey, this is the guy who traded Pete Crow Armstrong for half a season of Javi Baez. So if he wants to trade Jet Williams or Christian Scott or Drew Gilbert for half a season of Javi Baez, I'll take it this year. Nate, episode 16 in the books here. Always, always fun to talk to you. And of course, we'll have more coffee talk coming up in the coming weeks. Make sure to follow Nate on Twitter at Nathaniel Kosher. You can follow me at Huth Trevor, and of course follow our podcast at Coffee Talk PL. And make sure to follow along with what Nate's doing for Pitcher List in terms of writing. I also have my weekly article coming out. We always appreciate you guys listening, and make sure to share the podcast if you like it. Help it to continue to grow. And yeah, that's about all I got. Nate, always good to talk to you. We will have more Coffee Talk coming up next week. Coffee Talk is part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network, where we are always ready for that next cup of coffee.